Hello, all, and welcome to the Fantasy and Sci-Fi Fanatics Podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Kubal. Today, I have me a very special guest, Jason DeGray. Jason, how are you doing today?
Doing well. Thanks, Daniel. It's great to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for being patient. Season 4 took me forever. Everybody knows, like, my work schedule has just been nuts the last 2 years, but last year was, like, really crazy. So I appreciate you being patient and still wanting to come on, you know, and chatting with us today about your books and your writing, you know, journey and experiences. And you know, we always love when we can get a new author or creative on, you know, haven't heard from before. I love alumni. Don't anybody in the audience look at me. I love alumni, but it always kind of feels good to me to talk to somebody new because then they form a new, you know, chance for like an alumni relationship to come back on later and, you know, to get updated. And when I started the podcast, I had thought of kind of doing snapshots of different people's careers at different times. So I always love when I can get somebody new and then get them to come back. And, you know, there's a little bit of time in between. It's always cool to see the growth. Maybe it's the teacher in me, but I appreciate you coming and, you know, talking to us today. What has your writing journey been like up until this point?
Wow. It's been very long.
Feel that. Feel that.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of, it's its own story at this point. But you know, it was always something that I wanted to do. Since I was a very little kid, I can remember I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to tell stories. And you know, I have a very vivid memory of sitting down in my grandma's kitchen at the kitchen table with this notebook and like all these loose leaf sheets of paper. And I was writing my first novel. I was like 11, 12 years old. And my family was in the living room watching Days of Thunder. And I know, right? And I missed it. It was years before I actually Jeez. Saw it. But but you know, at that's kind of been like, you know, what has been like, you know, the thing that I wanted, you know, most, you know, everything like that. And so my first book actually came out. I self-published it in 2007. And oh, wow. this was back in the halcyon days of self-publishing.
Yeah.
And it was a wild time. It was the Wild West. You had like Ex Libris and Author House and, you know, all these places up there. And they're like, you know, get your books. Yeah. You know, get your books published. And we had the idea then, because, and they weren't like, at first they weren't like, you know, clarifying that, like, you know, just because we published our books through them didn't mean that it wasn't going to be in Barnes and Noble or Hastings or you know, Borders or whatever was around back then. And you know, so that's what a lot of these people thought. And so these people were paying out, I mean, like these guys were charging exorbitant sums of money for like this self-published garbage. And and you know, and basically all you were getting was a you know, a poorly put together book and like bookmarks and, you know, and this was like $3,000. And so, you know, after, you know, going and looking around at all this stuff and being like, that's really weird. Well, I'm going to do it myself. And so back then one of the only sites that would let you like publish your own book like that, was Lulu. And so, you know, and I'm talking like there was, this was a primitive thing, and there was no like Book Wizard and all of that type of stuff. I had to go into Word and set the margins on the document itself. And you know, and so this was my first like journey into how to craft a book, how to actually lay out and format and create the book itself as a thing. And so, you know, Lulu was, you know, my first experience with that. And then, you know, that book I published in, you know, 2007, 2008 is whenever that came out. And then since then, I, you know, I've published, you know, my other books, and two of which were finalists in the New Mexico Arizona Book Awards. So Eve was a finalist, and the first Ruined Man novel were both finalists in the New Mexico Arizona Book Awards. And fingers crossed this year, this coming year, Those Left Behind will be too, or hopefully win. You know, that would be nice. And so, you know, that's it's just been something that I have, you know, has It's been my dream. And so, this year, I took another big step, I guess, in my writing journey, and started my, own publishing company,
Oh,
with,
wow.
yeah, you know, with the, idea of publishing positive stories for men and boys. And
Oh, cool.
so the, yeah, and so that's kind of what I'm trying to do and give back. And so Those Left Behind is kind of my first offering, I guess, as far as this new publishing company, this new venture is concerned. And so I'm excited for the future and to see where this is going to lead.
Yeah, no, that's super cool. Well, I haven't heard the name Author House in a long time, Jason. Paul S. Kemp for Forgotten Realms royalty, right? I kind of fantasy book idea, not even fully. I just had like the outline and a few, like maybe the first seven chapters, and I had sent it to Author House, and somebody had gotten back to me, and I thought it was a pretty sweet gig, pretty sweet deal. Until I sent it to Paul S. Kemp. I just happened at the time to be Facebook friends with him, and now I am again, but like way back in the day. And I was like, "Hey, what do you think about this?" He goes, "Dan, this is ridiculous." He goes, "This is just some vanity press trying to, siphon money from you." He goes, "I wouldn't do it." I was like, "Are you sure? Like, it might be my only chance to get published." He's like, "Nope, you're gonna have plenty of chances later." He's like, "Or just be patient and wait for somebody else." And that was like the best advice. I say this all the time, and I can't wait to extend an invitation to him this summer to hopefully come on and chat, because I'm gonna say thank you again, Paul, for helping me avoid Author House that I could never remember because it was on my old email. And I can't
Yeah.
get into that one anymore, but it was Author House. I knew as soon as somebody was going to say it one of these days, I was going to remember. But that was the one. So, and my ex-girlfriend, she goes, "Why are they going to buy a book that you haven't even finished yet?" Like, she goes, "No offense, it sounds cool," because she was really into fantasy and stuff like Morrowind and stuff, Skyrim. She's like, "But you haven't even finished yet." She's like, "You haven't even given a rough draft." She's like, "That just doesn't." She goes, "I agree with Paul." So yeah, I ended up like not going with Author House, but man, that name takes me back. So that's really
Yeah.
funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that's what I'm saying. They were really playing on the the hopes and dreams of like,
Oh, yeah.
author stuff like that back then. And at first they were not forthcoming at all with the this says this is an actual publishing, that a couple years down the road they did get in trouble for it, and that since they had to like be upfront with this and stuff like that, because too many people were like, "This is crap, we're gonna sue." And and so my book's not in Barnes and Noble.
That's fair. I'm just so I that's I always tell people, I'm like, if you don't know, send it to somebody that knows more than you, because that has saved me so many times. So Paul, if you ever see this, thank you so much. Now, Jason, what genre or genres do you currently write in, and why?
Oh, I like to keep the genre broad, as say I write in speculative fiction, so sci-fi and fantasy and weird, fiction things, and I like those because it really allows my imagination to roam unchecked. And nothing wrong with literary fiction or anything like that, but I mean, I think that like with these speculative genres, you can do more and still talk about the same themes and still talk about the same issues, or portray the same people, and things like that. You can still do that, in a way that is more imaginative, and I think in a lot of instances, is easier to for people to connect with. And it's because that's one of the things that I really do believe and hold true is this idea that we make sense of the world through our favorite stories and the characters in these stories and things like that. These are actually our role models and our archetypes and stuff like that for how we like confront the world, that and things like that. And so it's not it's not too big of a stretch to say, as growing up as a kid, like Luke Skywalker was my role model, and I wanted to be this guy, and I would go out and how would Luke Skywalker handle this, and things like that. It was a completely fantasy setting. It was something that was way off base, but like the stuff was it was real life, and I was able to connect to that and filter that, and integrate a lot of like this real world stuff through these, these fantasy stories in a way that I don't think I would have had, it with like the speculative fiction and things like that that we were having to, or the literary fiction type stuff that we were having to read in school, like Hatchet or whatever that book was in fifth grade. And that, so it's to me a way to really allow that imagination to roam, while still touching on these themes and ideas that the author really wants to talk about. And I think one of the people that really did that great as far as the genre is concerned is Philip K. Dick.
Oh, yeah.
And
We say a lot about him on here.
And he really hammered that home. And then one of the other ones, a favorite of mine, is Robert E. Howard.
I
And
love Robert Howard.
and I really think that, like, he was working with these ideas and these themes and these and stuff like that, working through his stories as well. And to me, that's what brings that stuff to life. That's what makes it real. It isn't, oh, this takes place in Boston in 1957, and so it can be real, but this space Western can't. And I'm like, yeah, well, says who? Like, it's all taking place up here. And so, yeah. So, as far as that goes, yeah, it real is relative in that sense.
Well, I think of like the novella of it's like Victor Lavalle, The Ballad of Black Tom. And it was cool. It was like set in New York City, but it's a little different, and it's kind of like this Harlem Renaissance jazz age vibe. And he took, like you were saying, right, took some of the speculative fiction aspects of how African Americans and other people of color and immigrants and just different things that were going on in a similar period in his version of New York City, and then took some of those, enduring issues and made them into horror elements and threw in a little bit of magic, and all of a sudden you have like this absolutely like one of the best novellas I've ever read. But I totally agree with you, because it really took some of those world, real world aspects, and really historically accurate stuff too, and really made it fantastical. And that's personally what I like about fantasy and science fiction and their subgenres or speculative fiction, is that you do get, don't get me wrong, I love me some Gary Polson with Hatchet and the other ones, like The River and stuff. But there's just something about taking those elements and then combining them with, I always call it fantastical elements, whether it's horror, sci-fi, fantasy. And to me, it just makes it more fun. It's just, you get your cake and you get to eat it too, I think, with those kind of things. So I think that makes total sense.
Right. And maybe it even makes those problems, whenever you face them in a real world, seem like there's something that you can face, that you can overcome, right? Because you've taken it from this really fantastical setting and distilled it down to something that's like facing you in front of your life. And if it to, to me, can make these things more approachable and seem like they're not so daunting. And so I really do appreciate the genre for that.
Yeah, I think that makes total sense. I like what you said there, though, too, though, because, like, we don't have magic, unfortunately, or superpowers right now, at least I don't. So yeah, like, seeing, I think it's interesting to see how characters, do solve problems with those kind of things. Luke solves problems with the Force, but you brought him up, so I'm going to go back to like R.A. Salvatore's Vector Prime, right, where he starts the Uzzen Bonk series, and they can't really use the Force. Like the Force doesn't work against the Uzzen Bonk. Sorry, guys, spoilers, but it's been like 30 years almost. But it's interesting, because I like, there was another author that was right after Vector Prime, was like book two, and Luke ended up doing some of the coolest stuff I've ever seen, and he didn't even have the Force. It was like his version of like Iron Man 3, when Tony doesn't have the suit. And but it really showed, right, that, like, is it really that Luke's great because he has the Force, or because of who he is? And I like what you're saying, right? Like, he had new problems that popped up. They all did, and they had to figure out different ways to solve them. So I do think it really showed, transferable skills. And I don't know, as a, 19-year-old boy, it really made me think differently about some of the problems I was facing. And but it was in a more fun setting, I think. So yeah, I totally agree with it. I think it's, you just get a little bit different perspective, I think, from these types of genres. And get some really cool stories out of it. Kaladin Stormblessed right now. Oh my gosh, him and I are so vibing. Dalinar, being a father and being in the midst of battle, like that's how I feel with my job right now and like career as a teacher. And I have a little 3-year-old about to be running around here. And you know, it's like I totally relate to those types of characters because you know, Sanderson, he's using, like Brandon's using the real world aspects, right? Like, how do I be a good father? How do I do my job but also protect my kids and also be there for them? You know, and I don't know. I think it's really interesting what you're saying. I think it makes total sense, and yeah, it makes for really good stories.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Speaking of good stories, Jason,
Yes.
let's talk about some of yours now.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to skip down actually if I could, because I know we talked about this earlier. So I'm going to actually make like number six our three right now, and I'll go back because I am curious. So you had your book Twisted Yarns. So what was Twisted Yarns about, and what lessons did you learn from this book now that it's out of print that you maybe have used, you know, to help you form other stories?
Right. Well, Twisted Yarns was a collection of short stories and that I had written during my shoot, I don't know what to call my short story writing phase. I was really trying to like buckle down and figure out like the craft of storytelling, you know, in all of its different forms. And so I had written a novel, I'd written plays, I'd written poems, and you know, but the thing that, you know, but movie scripts, but the thing I never really wrote was a short story. And so I went through this phase where I was just going to sit down and I was going to write like a short story a week or something like this. And so Twisted Yarns was, you know, a lot of those short stories that I had written, and did call it, I don't know, the hubris of youth, I guess. But you know, whenever I got done writing these short stories, you know, of course I was proud of them, and you know, oh, this is the greatest thing ever. You know, people are going to be weeping openly whenever they're reading these things. That sort
I
of
remember that.
thing. Right. And you know, that's and it's you know, let's put this into a book. And so I had a friend of mine who actually, the same guy who actually did the cover for Those Left Behind, did, you know, did me a cover for Twisted Yarns, and I just kind of like threw it together, you know, into a book, and you know, and then published it. And went and ordered my copies of it, and I was sitting here and I was looking through this, you know, this book, and I was like disgusted. I was turned off by my own book, you know, because when I was talking about, like, you know, with my first book with the Saga of Seamus and Lulu, and I had to go in and do these margins and all of this type of stuff. I mean, this was hours and hours, you know, of me like learning curve here of like this intensive labor type of thing to try to come up with this book. And so I did not do nearly that with you know, Twisted Yarns. I just kind of compiled all these stories and then put some page breaks in there and threw them up, that you know, and let's see what happened. And you know, this was really a wake-up call for me in this idea of not just, you know, telling a story, but you know, but crafting a piece of art from beginning to the end. And whenever we're talking about books, you know, the book itself ultimately is the art. Okay, so yes, what's inside, you know, the story that you're telling and the characters that you're, you know, exploring and the world that you're telling it in, you know, all of this, this is your imagination made manifest, but that's not the art. The art is, you know, the finished product itself, and every piece of the book writing and the book creation process goes to actually helping you tell your story better. And so this was a big lesson that I had to learn, you know, with Twisted Yarns. One, because the stories themselves were not great, and so I was, you know, after it spent you know, time away from those and came back to them, and I was like, oh, I should have done this here. I could have done that there. I should have
Yeah.
done that here. And it wasn't just like one or two instances of that. It was like a lot. And I said, wow, like this is not quality. And this is not something that you put your best self into. And
Yeah.
so, and then, like I said, with the book itself, it didn't look well. There were weird pages and blank pages here, where they shouldn't be, and the page numbers were off, and it was a nightmare, and it didn't look well. I think that one of the things, because I'm an avid reader too, I mean, and one of the things that I appreciate as a reader is sitting down with a well-crafted book.
Yeah.
That's something that pulls you into the story. You don't want to have to be like, oh, jolted out because there's some weird page break in the middle of, and then it's like, wait, what's going on here? Or the editing was lackluster, or that sort of stuff. There's all of these elements that can actually hurt the story that you're trying to tell that are not actually what we think of as like the fun part of
Yeah.
the writing and the creating the world and these characters and things like that. That's the fun part, but the equally important part, I would say, the more important part is that final product and how you shape and craft, what your story is going to look like, what your book is going to look like whenever you present it to the world. And that in itself is a work of art. And so, that was what Twisted Yarns taught me, is like, yeah, my buddy did a cool job on the cover. I still like it to this day, but I couldn't finish reading my own book. And so whenever I realized that, I said, okay, we have to really figure this out. This labor-intensive process of crafting this book that I had started with my first book, into this Twisted Yarns, and said, this has to be, the part of your writing journey now that you really have to buckle down and start to make some sense of, because this is just as important as telling the story. And so, that's really whenever I started on that next phase of crafting stories instead of just telling stories. And that crafting extends to the editing process as well. And so as part of that finished product. And so, what you're really doing is molding, your story into a work of art. And you can't just throw it out on the page and expect it to be, as I lay dying or something.
Yeah. I think that makes total sense. And yeah, sometimes people think you're just gonna put it out, like my students think that all the time. I'm just gonna put out whatever and it's gonna be readable and make total sense with what I was trying to say to the reader. That's not how it works, guys. There's gotta be some sort of process involved and some sort of thought behind it. So definitely been there. I was laughing earlier because like that's what I was thinking of my first book. I was like, oh God, this thing's so horrible. People are like, oh well, just send it to me. I'm like, it's not gonna make sense to you. I'm like, I have to like go through at least another draft just to make a rough draft that is a rough draft. And I think they're thinking I'm being pretentious or something. Or I'm like, no, seriously, like it's not gonna make sense. I'm like, it was the first one I ever fully finished, 73,000, I don't know, 78,000 words or something. And I was like, it's here, it's there. And I think I switched POVs at one point or something. So yeah, I was like, it's gonna have to get filtered. So yeah, I totally understand that.
It's coming to that realization that, like, just because you can see it in your head and it's perfectly crafted out, and like, and somebody said, well, what about this? What do you mean you didn't get that? Like, here's
Yeah.
this whole backstory of this thing that I never mentioned. But how did you not pick up on that? And they're like, oh, well, now it makes sense. I'm like, oh, okay, no, I have to put that in now. I mean, so yeah, that's translating it from our head to the page is it's its own thing.
I might develop my editor for my prequel novella. Be like, why are you doing that for a prequel novella? I'm like, because it's the first thing I'm like about to publish, and I'm so glad I did because I've learned so much. Sarah Chorn, she's amazing. So And then I have another friend that's going to do like the final round after I get a. I'm just going to do, I'm like working on my beta draft right now, and I'm going to self-edit what we all talked about and then send it out to my betas. And then I'm going to have one more like clean round. But yeah, if I had not done that, like I was just thinking the other day, I'm a little tired this week from working this past weekend from traveling, but I was like on a roll. I was just like redoing my first chapter, my old first chapter. And I was going to take it up. I was like, no, this actually, it really makes sense with how I set certain things up. But now I know, right? But there's other things that made no sense, like you said. And I'm like, there's one part she was like, how does this person have a gun? You know, where'd the gun come from? The gun's just out, right? Like, and it just like made no sense. So I was like, I had so many instances of that where I'm like, holy moly. But like working on this manuscript has then helped me, you know, with my other ones where it's so much better. You said with craft, like so much better, you know, crafting just an overall story now and, you know, doing different things, hitting different tones. So I know it really stinks, but writing is a lot like being a blacksmith, right? Like you have a little bit left over. And then you restart, and then you know. But eventually, once if you do it enough, right, you can smith or wordsmith enough, and you'll get that really ooh nice shiny product. That is a work
Right.
of art, like you were saying. So I think that a lot of people that are listening here can
Right.
relate to that, Jason. So.
That's a good analogy. You know, you do it enough and eventually you get the Hattori Hanzo blade.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh man, yeah, and talking lots of talking about that with a class of mine. They're like really into Japan and Japanese like blacksmiths. I'm like, this is my kind of crew right here. So that's really funny. I'm gonna have to tell them that. I'll see them tomorrow. I'll have to tell them that that came up in this conversation. They'll get a kick out of that. Now, do you mind if we talk about? I know this is probably you know like out of order a little bit, you know, for publication, but the first cover verse I saw actually was Those Left Behind. So I was curious if you could just tell us what that book is about and how you came up with this idea.
So Those Left Behind is my most recent book. So this was the one that I put out earlier this year. And this is kind of it was kind of something that I was sitting on for a few years. I had the idea of this world marinating in my head. And I was, you know, playing around with it and messing around with the characters and you know trying to figure out you know what was going on and things and so I would sit down. One of the things I like to do, especially with like rough drafts or getting my ideas out and things like that, is I like to write on a typewriter, like an old school one, because it's like I can just focus and not have to worry about the distractions of Facebook or the green squiggly lines in Word or you know that sort of
My friend
stuff.
writes, he handwrites them to do that. He handwrites them and then he'll go through. Yeah.
And so you know I had done that and it had gotten this you know the this idea down and it's like all right well I want to turn this into a space western because I you know I love the idea of a space western. I kind of love the aesthetic. I kind of like what you know the look and feel of it. You know, think like Firefly or you know that sort of stuff is I think really cool. And I kind of wanted to try to you know capture this idea of like this like rugged pioneer type of spirit, like out in space.
Yeah.
And so you know that was what I'd set out to do with you know with this world and so you know I get my rough draft done and then and this was a couple of years ago. I'd sat down to the computer and I typed up all my notes and then I started building it out. I added probably 30,000 words once I started typing it up, you know, and got it into the computer and went down one day to you know open up my computer and you know to go back and it was gone. It was gone. And I was like, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. And so I was looking on all my hard drives that I'd saved it on. It had disappeared. It had disappeared. And so 2 years ago, on my birthday, I had come to this one of the my college professors, English professors, had told us this story. I can't remember who it was, this old 18th, 19th century writer who's he had written this entire manuscript, and then like his maid burned it, used it as kindling, and then like he was so upset, and then like he had to write it all over again, and then he's like, oh well, now I think that it's better this time. And so I was like, all right, well, I remembered that, and I was like, I'm gonna sit down and I'm gonna write this. And so I opened up my computer, opened up the file, and there at the very end of the file is one single wall of text, was all of the stuff that I had written that had disappeared. Like, not in any order or anything like that. It was just there at the end of the text. And I was like, what is going on? And so,
Crazy.
okay, that's weird. I'm gonna get to work. And so I started, working on the book and telling the story and getting back into the world. It is, my favorite world that I've created to date so far. I think it's a lot of fun. And so, it takes place, way out in space, and there's this other solar system that these shadowy figures called the Pioneers had came and terraformed and colonized, basically. And 2,000 years in the from where the in the past from where the story takes place, this cataclysm happened. This rogue planet entered the solar system and destroyed a moon, and it rained down on the planet where this first book takes place and turned it into like this desert wasteland and all of this type of stuff. And then the pioneers just up and left and they disappeared. And so, it's 2,000 years since this event happened, and these people have been struggling and trying to survive, and without the pioneers and the access to the technology and all of this type of stuff. And at the start of the book, things start getting weird again. And so, there's things happening in the desert on the sky and stuff like that. People have to go out and investigate. And so that's kind of where this first book starts.
That's very interesting. When I saw the cover, I was like, oh, that's interesting. And I checked that, what the blurb off of that. I was like, yeah, that's definitely going to be my kind of thing, because I always wanted to be a cowboy as a kid, and then I wanted to be a Han Solo once I saw Star Wars. It was like 4 and then age 5. So now as an adult, I'm like, I would totally be a space cowboy, like for sure. Like there's like hands down, like I would be Mal for sure. So yeah, that sounds absolutely awesome. Do you mind just telling us a bit about Eve and the Ruined Man as well? Those also sound really, really cool.
Well, Eve was kind of my attempt at like a cyberpunk novel, but it kind of turned weird, as my stuff kind of does. And so, it starts out, I think, pretty cyberpunky, but ends up with some really cool twists. And so, Eve is basically this genetically modified, genetically enhanced shell that this woman's consciousness gets dumped into, and in this process, she gets amnesia, and so, and then escapes the lab that she is in, and gets found by this private detective type of guy, they're going around and trying to figure out, who she is, where she came from, and what's exactly going on behind this, like, this artificial body, that she is inhabiting, and all of this takes place, in like the Denver of the far future type of thing,
Oh, that sounds so
and
cool.
so, and
That's
so
cool.
it's pretty much this little, self-contained city state, and outside of it is, nothing but, desolation and despair. And,
Just like
and
Denver.
right. Right. And so, and that's one of the things that I like to do is, set my stories kind of like some of this stuff in familiar places. And so the Ruined Man is actually, like a horror detective horror novel that is set in Albuquerque, where I
Oh,
from.
that's cool.
Yeah,
I
you
liked
know.
Albuquerque. Went through
Yeah.
there before moving to Arizona.
Yeah. And that's where I set it up, and lived and really worked in a bunch of the places that I frequent and things like that. And so, it was but my really I would guess one of my those two, The Ruined Man and then the sequel, The Dark Goddess, my only real ventures into the horror world, I guess. A few years ago, I just kind of lost my stomach for all that for some reason, which is
I
weird
get that.
because I love the horror genre. And I mean, I lived and breathed it forever. And at really, after The Ruined Man, I was like, oof, I can't do that. That's, the mind space and the head space and all that that I had to be in to write that was not fun. And so I really wanted to, be able to have fun and be creative and imaginative and not writing about horrible, terrible things. And so, I'd kind of moved away from that. I still love the story. And like I said, that one and Eve were there were finalists in the New Mexico Arizona Book Awards. And so that was cool. And The Ruined Man was actually my novel that was picked up by an indie press here. That was really good. I mean, it's cool because small presses and things like that, you're not getting like the prestige or whatever that we think that we get from the idea of a traditional house and all of that type of stuff. But it was still really validating for me in that like
Oh, yeah.
somebody else outside of me thought enough of what I was doing to be
Yeah,
like,
they want you on their team.
right. And so, that I was like, that's really awesome. Right. I really, enjoy that. I feel good about that. And so, that came at, a really interesting time in my writing journey where, I was like, no, nobody's ever going to read this. It's all terrible. And all of that type of stuff, that wallowing
Yeah.
pity and whatnot. And, and so,
It's my 9 o'clock tonight.
right.
No, right at 10.
And so it came at a time, where, that was what I was at. And so it was like exactly what I needed. And so, I do love the story. I'm planning on re-releasing it through Outlaw Star Press,
Oh, cool.
this coming year, that one and the sequel. And so they're gonna get a glow up, and so they're gonna be out there again. And I'm excited. I do love the story. I think the characters are really cool. It follows Victor Wolf, and he's like this ruined man, and he gets attacked by a demon at the beginning. I mean, I'm not spoiling anything. That's literally how the book starts. The dude gets attacked by a demon and turns into the ruined man. And so, he's going through and acclimating to this new existence as this cursed soul, basically. And and then along the way, in that starts doing good. And and so in a way, it really is a redemption story. And so it's near and dear to my heart for that. And so
That's cool. Now, I know we're winding down on time, but I always love to ask people this, make you pick your favorite child. Who is the one character you would not want to have your back? I have your back, would not want to have your back in a fight or a mission or a quest or a case, and why? Out of your characters.
Out of my character, oh,
Yeah.
easily, Jonas in The Ruined Man, just because The dude cannot be trusted even when he's smiling at you or doing you favors.
Yeah. Huh,
Like,
that's a good answer.
there's
Yeah.
the yeah, dude, it's not going to end well. So
Cool. I always liked that. My friend gave that to me. I've been tweaking. It's a similar question. I've been tweaking it ever since, but I keep asking different ways, like kind of like regurgitating the same question. And it's so funny because we always get like a really cool, unique answer out of it. So I'm so glad that he suggested that because he wanted me to ask it to him because he was like kind of debating for a while. Like his was like, yeah, like who, because he had a lot of characters, like more like comedic, like fantasy and sci-fi. So he had a lot of characters, like you don't want Jar Jar with you. Like, so I just thought like that would be kind of an interesting one to change it up. But I think that's a really good answer. And I think it says a lot about, that character in your writing. So I think that's a really good answer. That's really cool.
Oh, thank you.
I always think of that myself. Like, who would I want? Who would I not want?
Right.
This is awesome. I know we're winding out of time. I just want to make sure you have enough time to talk about any news, updates, current projects, anything like that that you can share with us before we head off for today.
Like I was saying at the beginning, I have a new venture started called Outlaw Star Press, and you can check that
I love
out.
that name, by the way.
Thank you. And you can check that out at outlawstarpress.com. And just you see what kind of we're offering and things like that. We're really going to start ramping up, opening up to submissions and stuff like that next year to hopefully, really get some great, compelling stories to tell out there and to inspire young men everywhere. And so that's kind of the mission that we're going to be doing and what I'm focused on right now. And so I have all of my coming public coming up publishing is going to be through that. And so I have quite a few of my own projects on the list for next year. Through this, I'll have a children's book out. Kind of a nonfiction book exploring the virtues and things like this, the classic virtues of courage, wisdom, justice, and temperance, as well as some fiction stories and things like that, we're going to be getting out under Outlaw Star Press. So that will be where I'm doing everything. You can find me on Facebook at Jason DeGray Author. And that's kind of the only place I'm at. I don't mess with social media much.
That's fair.
I don't know, but so when I
It's a
am,
huge time sucker.
it is. So when I do, that's where I'm at. Is with it says is there. So yeah, that's where I'll be.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate you coming on today, Jason. I just want to remind our audience, in case you forgot or in case this is your first time, you can find all of our authors and creatives, all of their books, social links, whatever they gave us, the any place where they want you to go. You can find it down below in the description, anywhere where you're watching or listening to this podcast. We want to remind people, follows really help everybody out. Subscribe to if it's their channel or follow them on Facebook, like Jason's saying. That really helps out. Don't forget reviews. Though reviews are going to be really, really, really critical, helps everybody out. We've talked about that repeatedly the last three seasons for our authors, of course, traditionally published, indie published, but also our other creatives as well. We've got a lot of people on that have talked about people behind the scenes that helped them out. Jason mentioned his friend that did his book covers. I got some people that have helped me out. I mention all the time, and when you help me out, you help them out in the long run. So it helps all of us get really cool stories, get really cool products. So if everybody can continue to do that, we'd really appreciate it. And don't forget to click that subscribe button. Jason, thank you so much. This was great. I really look forward to see what you guys are doing, in the new year. Can't wait to have you back on and kind of get a little snapshot of, what you've been working on, yourself, but also the press itself. Again, really sweet name. If there's anything we can do to help you out, please let me know. Make sure I can send you my Facebook group for the podcast. You can share anything in there. You can collect submissions. Like, I just am kind of like a facilitator to make sure everybody's kind of being cool to one another and that I'm protecting you guys from all the scammers that are out there. I just kick a lot of people out that I know just are trying to get our money, then we don't have a lot. But feel free to join that and share anything in there that you want. And other than that, just like let me know and we'll help you out as best we can. So,
All right, great. Thanks, Daniel. And thanks
yeah,
for
no
having me.
problem.
This was
Yeah,
great.
anytime. No, I really appreciate it. This was great. Well, Jason, you have a great rest of the day. I hope to talk to you soon. I'll be emailing you this weekend. But other than that, happy writing, my friend, and I'll talk to you later.
All right, we'll see you.
See you.